Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Seeds of Destruction when we come back. You know, during World War II, our parents and grandparents planted victory gardens, and they helped to provide their own food and fiber for themselves and their country. But today, over half the food we eat is now imported from outside of our borders, and our food is produced from hybrid seed that will no longer reproduce, and it's nutritionally deficient. And Adolf Steinbrom of Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter into perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds. And when they were compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states, Steinbrom's open-pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, 205% more manganese, and the same result has been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Now, in the opinion of many ecologic farmers, hybrid seed merely masks poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being. Now, if you'd like to know more about this multinational corporate monopoly of our seed and food supplies and how you can become independent from them, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. And this month's, well, I say this month, it's in the March 2008 edition of The Money Changer. Franklin Sanders interviewed a fellow by the name of William Engdahl, spelled E-N-G-D-A-H-L. He titled his article Seeds of Destruction, so I thought, well, let's take that format, Seeds of Destruction, and let's apply it and let's take a look at what he's talking about. He calls it the hidden agenda of genetic manipulation. What are the politics behind this genetic manipulation? Well, F. William Engdahl's latest book, called Seeds of Destruction, The Hidden Agenda of Genetic Manipulation, focuses on how a small American elite seeks to establish control over the very basis of human survival. It's our food supply, our daily bread. As Henry Kissinger once observed, he said, "Control the food and you control the people." Economist and writer F. William Engdahl has authored a best-selling book on oil and geopolitics. It's called A Century of War, Anglo-American Oil Politics and the New World Order, translated into several languages now. Now, for more than 30 years, beginning the first oil shock and world grain crisis in the early 1970s, Engdahl has written about geopolitics, energy, agriculture, the World Trade Organization, the International Monetary Fund, politics, and economics. After a degree in politics from Princeton University and graduate study in comparative economics at the University of Stockholm, he worked as an economist and a freelance journalist in New York and Europe. covering the collapse of the Soviet Union, the 1997-98 Asia crisis, and the GATT, Euro Way Around trade talks, the EU food policies, the grain cartel, the International Monetary Fund policy, third world debt issues, hedge funds, and the political role of derivatives trade. Well, Engdahl contributes regularly to a number of publications worldwide. He currently lives in Germany, and in addition to writing regularly, he also acts as a consulting geopolitical risk economist. And you can order Seeds of Destruction from www.globalresearch.ca. The book reads like a novel, but is footnoted like a Supreme Court brief. So let me give you my highest recommendation and strongly urge you to buy and read it for yourself at Mr. Engdahl's website. You can also order the book. It's www.engdahl, that's spelled E-N-G-D-A-H-L dot oilgeopolitics.net. And you'll find a number of fascinating articles that Mr. Engdahl kindly made time for in this interview on March 18th, 2008. This is an interview by Franklin Sanders of Engdahl dealing with Seeds of Destruction. What is the geopolitical end game of genetically modified seeds? The Money Changer begins by asking the question, what's wrong with food from genetically modified organisms, also known as GMOs? Isn't it just the next stage in scientific advance? Engdahl's reply. Well, let me ask this. What is right with genetically modified organisms? GMO science is absolutely incompetent. Bombarding the DNA of different plant species such as soybeans, rice, and corn, and now wheat, with genes from another kingdom, bacteria, plus the idea that private corporations should take out patents on basic life forms that have existed as long as the human species. They now put private patents on these and then try to extract license fees every year from farmers around the world. Not only is GMO science upside down, but microbiology today is also based on a scientifically incompetent view of life. They reduce life to hard little steel balls called genes so that you can play with genes like Lego blocks to create new structures. And that is flawed from the ground up. GMO is inherently unstable. Just talk with any leading scientists who aren't bought and paid for by GMO giants like Monsanto or Syngenta or DuPont. And if they're honest and have done serious work, they'll tell you that these structures are inherently unstable and we are literally letting the genie out of the jar, threatening the future of human life on this planet by sending GMOs into the human food chain. Sanders asks the next question and says, but no less an authority than the U.S. Department of Agriculture says that there is nothing at all wrong with genetically modified organisms. They are perfectly safe. Why do they do that if they aren't? And Mr. Engdahl's response is that back in 1992, Papa Bush, that's George H.W. Bush, was president. Well, he made an executive order that henceforth all U.S. government agencies responsible for human health and safety and food and drugs would treat genetically modified patented seeds as being substantially equivalent to natural organisms. Now, that is hardly a rigorous or tight scientific concept. Substantially means more or less. That is, according to Webster, substantially, more or less. And substantially equivalent means that it's more or less the same as normal corn and normal soybeans. But it cannot be more or less the same. That's an oxymoron. Otherwise, how could Monsanto receive a patent for it? Now listen, applying for a patent, you have to claim that what you're patenting is unique. They've taken a gene, and then they put it in a cannon, and then they shoot a bacteria or some other organism into this corn's DNA and produce something unique, something new. Now, they want to have their cake and eat it too. They want patents on these seeds, on life forms, so that they can essentially put us into a new type of serfdom, depending upon the GMO corporations. But at the same time, they want to claim that they don't need any government regulations because it's harmless. It's ordinary. It's just no different than any other seed. So Sanders asks this. He said, well, what about GMO technique for BT corn, for instance? They take a gene from a bacterium that produces a certain toxin and then blast that at a corn cell nucleus. That creates a corn seed that produces the same bacterial toxin to keep European corn borers from eating the corn. Engdahl responds, but it kills everything else in sight as well, just like antibiotics do. So Sanders asks, well, they take two completely different life forms, such as a bacterium and a plant. Then they mix their genes. How can they limit the change they bring about to one effect? The genetic mechanism is incomprehensibly complex. If you change it to produce one kind of toxin, how do you know it won't produce another toxin as well? One you really don't want. Engdahl's response was, well, I can give a direct example that I know personally, Frank. A close friend of mine, Gottfried Glockner, farms here in Germany. The first German farmer to win permission back in 1996 to plant GMO corn on his farm north of Frankfurt. He was a very proud farmer and always looked into the new scientific and technological trends. He thought GMO made sense. After all, it was scientific progress. Well, his crop came up even and straight and beautiful. Then he began feeding it to his prize-winning cattle herd, about 80 head. He began mixing 10% GMO corn into normal feed, and he gradually increased it to 100% GMO, until ultimately he was feeding the GMO corn to all of his livestock. Every single cow started having absolutely terrible diarrhea. Calves were born with ears sticking out of their spines, as well as two other ears with distended udders, with livers hanging on the barn floor, and I've seen the pictures. They are as grotesque as the 1960s thalidomide babies. Gottfried went to the corporation who gave him the seeds. It was the Syngenta Company, one of the big four that I call the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And he asked them to check their seed sample for the GMO corn that they had sent because of the very bizarre results. My calves are dying left and right. Something is really wrong. So Syngenta told him that they had sent the seed back to their U.S. lab and it all tested perfectly. You must be doing something different, something wrong, they told the farmer. So the farmer took soil samples to an independent research lab, and he found that where the cows have sprayed their feces, this soil was highly toxic. Through very complicated research, he found that in one of the cow's four stomachs, the corn changed into a highly toxic substance that was actually killing the calves and breeding all sorts of monsters. So the farmer sued Syngenta, and he ended up having his life threatened, not to mention his farm and his livelihood ruined. On national television, he gave interviews and spoke with lots of farming groups and farmers, and he is still doing that. He wants to make sure that his experience teaches other farmers and consumers just how dangerous this GMO technology really is. Sanders asks the next question and says, well, this is the same GMO crop raised here in the U.S., isn't it? Engdahl, I don't know how much Syngenta is, but Monsanto probably dominates the U.S. GMO corn market. However, it's not anything better. How did the government pass the Monsanto or DuPont or Dow varieties of GMO? The Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, and the USDA simply asked Monsanto for their company test. Well, back to the 1940s, Monsanto has a track record of fraudulently altering test data. This is putting the fox in charge of the hen house. So, Franklin Sanders asks, well, the FDA and the USDA do not require tests by any independent agency or does not perform tests themselves. They just take whatever Monsanto hands the agency as gospel. And Engdahl responds, exactly. That's exactly correct. And most American or Canadian consumers have no idea that these GMOs have never been tested by either the FDA, the USDA, or any independent laboratory. The only tests done are by the manufacturers. They're totally biased. They think these agencies are there to protect consumers' interests. They're not. They protect the corporations' interests. They're bought and paid for by the corporations. And the truth is absolutely the opposite. Now, that's one of the terrifying facts that motivated me to write Seeds of Destruction. These private companies have amassed great power over the human food supply, power that they never before in human history have ever had or has rested in any single person's private hands. And that alone is grounds for me to oppose GMO heart and soul. It's a monopoly, pure and simple, a government-promoted monopoly. So Sanders responds with the next question and asks, well, more than that, they have seized control of these U.S. government agencies, while people have been led to believe falsely that these agencies are there to protect them. Is that correct? And Engdahl's response is, you know, it's a revolving door. Monsanto's attorney in Washington, his name is Michael Taylor. He was the top enforcer for genetic substances at the FDA. All right, now when Taylor retires from the FDA after he's done his work for Monsanto, he then enters private practice as vice president for public relations for Monsanto. It's just a revolving door. He's bought and paid for. And there is example after example like that. Mickey Cantor was Bill Clinton's trade representative. He left government after making many favorable rulings for Monsanto while he was in government service. The Gene Giants. And he became directly a member of Monsanto's board of directors when he left government services. This is how this works. When you begin to scratch the surface, you'll be shocked. And all of this information is openly available. Hell, it's on the internet. What I've documented in the book is no hidden knowledge or conspiracy theory. It's all public record. It's conspiracy reality. People are out of control. And these same people that are out of control are now in control of our food supply. Sanders asks, well, how far has this gone already? About 80% of the corn grown in the United States today is GMO corn, soybeans, and rice. Engdahl responds, soybeans, nearly everything grown. Do you have a percentage figure on rice? And the money changer responds, I think it's about 60%. The unanswered question and the danger is that the same basic stuff that killed those cows in Germany, although a different type of genetic modification, is being fed to human beings here in the United States without any tests for untoward reaction or safety. But Gluckner's case in Germany wasn't unique. Now, what about Dr. Arpad Pusztai in Scotland? Well, Engel's response was, well, Arpad's a very dear friend of mine, and back in the late 1990s, he was known as the leading GMO researcher, biologist, and nutritionist. He published dozens of scientific papers and was at the time convinced that GMO would feed the human race and solve hunger. Well, he got financing at the government-supported Rowett Research Institute in Scotland under Tony Blair's administration, and he was to perform independent 3-year-long studies of GMO feeds and their effects on animals, particularly rats. Well, after a number of months, he found alarming results, which he hadn't expected at all. To his director, he said, I think we have to go public with our findings to warn public officials and to warn the people in general that we must go very slowly releasing GMOs into the human food chain. Let's do some long-term research, 5 to 10 years, to see how it affects organisms over a long period of time. So he found that the organs of the rats that were fed on GMO potatoes were dramatically shrunken, their livers, kidneys, hearts, and most alarming, he dared not say this on national television in Britain, but the most alarming thing was the brains of the GMO rats had shrunk. Now, within 72 hours of making his findings public, he was fired. His computer and all of his files had been seized by government agents and locked up. He had been forbidden under severe penalty to discuss anything with any colleagues, and he had been told not to have any discussion with any of his colleagues under severe penalty. The reaction was so dramatic that he suffered a heart attack. Today, he's in his mid-70s. He has been blacklisted from any work. The British Academy of Sciences made fraudulent accusations about his scientific methodology. They staged an absolutely McCarthyite witch hunt against Dr. Arpad Pusztai, and they totally ruined him financially and professionally. Sanders asks, sponsored by the government? Engdahl. From a colleague who had retired and felt safe to tell him, he later found out that Tony Blair had called the director of the Rowett Institute the day after and said, you shut this guy Pusztai up or you won't have any research funds ever in the future. So when he found out that Tony Blair had been reacting to a phone call from none other than William Jefferson Clinton back in Washington, D.C., you see, Clinton, in turn, had gotten a phone call from Monsanto. Now, trace the causality there. They were terrified that this Pusztai finding, independent scientific research on GMO's effects, would kill GMO in its infancy, and it certainly would have. Had everybody had this information early on, it certainly would have killed it in its infancy. That same pattern of suppression has appeared again and again and again, especially in the United States and Britain. Now, a Berkeley, California research biologist discovered a GMO infestation in the World Corn Seed Bank in Oaxaca, Mexico, and published an alarming article in the British magazine Nature. Monsanto intervened to simply buy the biology department of Berkeley University and tried to prevent Dr. Chalepa, the biologist, from getting tenure. So after a bitter fight, he finally won. But that gives a flavor as to how these corporations attempt to corrupt and to influence honest science. Sanders asks if they are scheming to monopolize the market. Now that 80% of corn and 100% of soybeans and 50 to 60% of rice planted is now GMO, how much further do they have to go before they have the total monopoly that they're seeking? Engdahl responded, well, Europe right now is the major battleground. In the developing world, they are forced in GMO through U.S. food aid in Africa, for instance. The Americans simply force it upon the developing world. The Africans are very skeptical. They don't want GMO, but no longer do they get food aid in the form of money to buy crops from neighboring countries. They aren't in famine, but rather they get it as GMO seeds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, whether they want it or not. So instead of getting money, they get the GMO seeds. And if you don't want to eat the GMO, then go hungry. Now, this is, in fact, a worldwide fight. Asia and China are very alarmed at the prospect of Monsanto coming in. After initial openness to GMOs, they dramatically pulled back. It's a battle. It's a battleground. In Germany, the Monsanto lobby is putting enormous pressure on the government to allow GMO, which previous governments have forbidden. Country by country, it is a battle. Sanders asks, well then, the ultimate goal is to control the entire stock of seed and germplasm in the entire world, is it not? Engdahl responds, I think they aim at nothing less than total control of all of the food supplies on planet Earth. And Henry Kissinger once said, if you control oil, you control countries. If you control food, you control the people. And I think that has been the goal of powerful, wealthy families like the Rockefellers and Kissingers and Rothschilds throughout their foundations or through their foundations throughout history. Now, for decades, reaching back into the 1920s, the Rockefellers and other wealthy families were financing what was called then eugenics. That is, race science for the purity of race, something that became unpopular after World War II when Allied soldiers discovered the gas chambers in Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen, where humans were being exterminated in large numbers. Sanders asks, well, also native Germans and hundreds of thousands of native Germans, handicapped or mentally retarded or mentally ill, were liquidated under Nazi eugenics programs, were they not? Engdahl responded, well, eugenics in Hitler's Germany would never have gained the renown that it enjoyed in the 1930s without the Rockefeller Foundation's financing. Right up to 1939, 6 years into the Nazi regime, the foundation supported the German program with hundreds of thousands of dollars, which today would translate into hundreds of millions of dollars. Well, wait, the Rockefeller Foundation financed Nazi racial research, and Engdahl responds, not only research, but they also forced sterilization of the mentally or socially unfit, carried out by the Nazis. And members of the board of directors of the Rockefeller Foundation would come back to New York saying, it's a shame that Nazism has such a bad reputation in the Western press, because they're actually doing what we only talk about doing in this country. They're really working on racial purity in Germany. Engdahl went on and said, well, it even gets worse than that. In the 1950s, after the gas ovens had been uncovered and the Nuremberg trials had been held, the Rockefeller family consciously changed the name of eugenics to genetics. Eugenics to genetics. To the tune of over $100 million, they financed genetically modified organism research, genetic engineering. And that's a Rockefeller Foundation project from start to finish. And the idea is to control the food so that you can control the people. And that's why they want to patent these life forms. Four private companies, three with intimate links to the Pentagon, companies such as Monsanto, Dow Chemical, and DuPont, traceable clear back to World War I, have been involved in black Pentagon operations for decades now. And they have lied about Agent Orange effects on American soldiers in Vietnam. And they have lied about almost every damage their chemicals have done to their own employees. And They've lied about the damages done to the nearby residents and towns and farms where they have factories. And these are the people that we're told to trust with the human food supply. Sanders asks, well, what is the agenda behind this? What is their final goal? And Engdahl responded, I have given a lot of thought to that over the decades, and I've been researching. The only conclusion that rational people can reach is that people at the very top have gotten such enormous wealth and power that they now feel they are above sovereign elected governments. These families feel that they're like kings, and at the root, they're highly paranoid, psychologically disturbed individuals who look at the world and say, there are 6 billion people in the world out there, and if they get the idea to go after me and my wealth, I'll have nothing. So we have to cull the human herd, as Prince Philip once so charmingly put it. That's their mentality. Ted Turner, the founder of CNN and a multi-billionaire, gave $1 billion to the U.S. to finance population reduction programs in Africa and elsewhere. He said he would be comfortable in a world with only 225 million people. Then we would have room for the right nature preserves and ecological developments. Now think about that, ladies and gentlemen. 225 million, Ted Turner said he'd be comfortable in a world with 225 million out of today's 6.5 billion. He would reduce the Earth's population by 13 times and be comfortable. Well, boys and girls, that's the plan, that's the program, that's the agenda. Hang on, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, so we can satisfy all of the agencies of government around the world in the communications field. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. However, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing the March 2008 Money Changer, the lead article by William Engdahl, Seeds of Destruction, talking about the GMO problem, or the GMO science. Franklin Sanders asks this question. He said, "You're saying that the ultimate goal, then, is to reduce human population through genetic modification of organisms." Engdahl. Dramatically. My God, let me put an arrow. Let me underline that. Now listen up again. According to Ted Turner, he would like to see the world's population reduced to about 225 million. The official policy from the Club of Rome calls for 500 million. The current population is 6.5 billion. That's 6,500,000,000. If the official estimates of population reduction were to come to pass, we would eliminate 6 billion people from off of planet Earth. Well, boys and girls, that is 13. We're going to save one. We're going to reduce the world's population by 12 times 500 million, or 12 times the amount that we want to have left over. What's the time frame? 2050. Over the next 42 years, they're planning to reduce the Earth's population. This is their official statistics. Comes right out of the Club of Rome. They say, this is what we want to do. They're not the only ones in the program. Engdahl, when asked by Franklin Sanders, "Do you mean to tell me that they're planning to reduce human population?" And he said, "Dramatically." My God, that's pretty dramatic, wouldn't you say? You take 13 parts and eliminate 12 of them, that's pretty dramatic. Now, it just so happens that there's some statements in Bible prophecy, such as Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26 and Isaiah chapter 6 and Revelation chapter 6, Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, you know, make the same claims, make the same statements. In Bible prophecy, it's called Great Tribulation. That's great trouble. Boys and girls, I would suggest to you that if you're going to remove 6 billion people from planet Earth over the next 42 years, that's going to be very dramatic. There's never been anything like it short of Noah's flood. At least not to my knowledge. Engdahl says, dramatically. Sanders responds by asking, presently the Earth allegedly supports 6 billion people. Now, you mean to reduce humanity down to less 1/20th its present number? And Sanders responds after the question mark, that's genocide. And Engdahl's response is yes, and would have catastrophic ecological repercussions, probably the end of mankind. If you're going to reduce the population by such a dramatic amount over such a short period of time, what makes you think that the engine of this destruction of 6 billion people can be stopped when we reach 500 million? You know, stop and think about it pragmatically. In order to do this, we've got to unleash some powerful diseases, hunger and famine, and ecological changes. When we do that, when we unleash Lassa fever, AIDS, bird flu, GMOs on the population. What makes you think that it won't kill all of us? What makes you think that you can stop it when you get to the desired population level? That's the question. And Engdahl's response was yes, and that would have catastrophic ecological repercussions, probably the end of mankind. Sanders asks, in the late 1980s and early 1990s, I researched the environmental movement, and I even wrote a book about it, The Greening, with Larry Abraham. First of all, I quickly learned that the environmental movement was created whole cloth by foundation money. It's not a grassroots movement at all. It was created by the foundations, the major foundations, the Rockefeller and Ford foundations, and others. Second, one theme that runs throughout environmental literature and propaganda is that there are too many people in the world, just too many people. And in the course of this research, I got a copy of the Population Council's yearly report. And Engdahl's response was, yes, that's the John D. Rockefeller group. Sanders. He says, I tell you without exaggeration that it was so disturbing, that it was so disgusting, and it was so filled with hatred of humanity that it made me sick, physically ill. Now, you say things that sound outrageous. And these people think that the human herd ought to be culled. And as crazy as that may sound, that does appear to be what these people want. And Engdahl responds, yes, that's true. And constantly keeping people in a state of confusion and a state of subservient passivity. These people think that they are mightier than God himself, and they count on humanity behaving as a herd, passive, waiting for their orders, stupid, not capable of thinking outside the box. Sanders asks, but let's turn this around. Wasn't the Green Revolution sponsored primarily by the Rockefeller Foundation, a humanitarian effort to increase third world food production, especially in Asia? Engdahl's answer was, oh, not at all, not at all. After World War II, Nelson Rockefeller went down to Mexico with Norman Borlaug. They had a problem. They had produced huge stocks of nitrate for explosives for the war. The factories still existed after World War II. They were still capable of producing nitrates. But they had no outlet for the nitrates. One of their scientists proposed converting the nitrates into nitrogen fertilizer. Then they went down to Mexico and said, if we introduce chemical nitrogen fertilizer and mechanized farming, that will create a new market for gasoline and also for our chemical surpluses. Norman Borlaug was an employee of the Rockefeller University at the time. And Borlaug went down there and started experimenting with different wheat hybrids. The companies sold the wheat hybrids to American companies like DuPont and Pioneer Seed Company. Now you have a new foreign market for seed, a new market for fuel, and a huge market for chemical fertilizer using your nitrate. That was the Green Revolution. Now let me put a bracket right here, boys and girls, and let me point out something to you that maybe you had not thought of or hadn't considered in this equation. It's not in the article. But in the Bible, in Leviticus 19, verse 19, let me flip over here quickly to it, and let me read it to you. Leviticus 19, 19 says, you shall keep my statutes, and you shall not let thy cattle gender with a diverse kind, and you shall not sow your field with mingled seed. Did you catch that one? You shall not sow your field with mingled seed or crossbreed your cattle. And what is it that the Department of Agriculture and the scientific foundations and the universities have been doing. Just exactly what we were told by God, our Creator, not to do. That's precisely what we're doing. Now, that's a violation of that instruction. It's a violation of that law. It's called sin in the Bible. Sin is simply a crime. Crime has a penalty. There's a natural penalty that comes from crime. In the common law, the penalties are built in. When you practice adultery, you don't need a policeman at Flo's Whorehouse passing out tickets like a traffic cop hiding behind a billboard looking for speeders. The penalty is built into the product. Adultery produces and promotes AIDS, herpes, and VD. Venereal disease is the penalty that we pay. It's the natural, automatic penalty that we all pay for adultery, that is, sexual misconduct. Now, here's a statute in Leviticus 19:19. It says, "You shall not sow your fields with mingled seed." Mingled, hybridized seed. We not only have gone beyond hybridization, we're now tampering with the genes in the seeds and creating entirely new biological species, new plants that have never existed before. And we're beginning to see the results of it. We can see it in lab tests. We see it in rats and mice. We see it here with this German farmer feeding GMO seeds to his cows and destroys his herd. Now, how long does it take to do that? How many generations will it take? Well, in Pottinger's cats back in the 1920s, they put cats on cooked food and pasteurized milk, and in four generations they turned the cats sterile. Ladies and gentlemen, sterility and disease here in the United States is an epidemic. We have birth defects that affect 5% of live births. One baby out of every 20 now in this country has a birth defect. Most of the population is now lactose intolerant. Sodomy is endemic and rampant. Hell, it's a civil right now. What caused it? Where did it come from? Could we dare to suspect hybridization of our seed and the pasteurization of our milk, the vaunted science that we all admire and worship? Could it be? Have we ever thought? Now, the first harvest year after World War II, it looked pretty good. Yields were boosted by an average of 20%. But after two, three, or four harvests, the yields actually dropped lower than before the Green Revolution. Now, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but all this belonged to a huge project that was started by Rockefeller and the Rockefeller Foundation and their money back in the 1950s at the Harvard Business School. They financed a project called agribusiness to create an industrialized top-down pyramid business, a model for producing food and animals. So Sanders asks, well, farming became production and factories in the field. And Engdahl's response was, factories in the field, CAFO, confined animal feeding operations. Big, huge, multinational corporate farms. And the whole nine yards. It all started out at Harvard, at the business school, after World War II. The goal was not the quality of the nutrition entering the human food chain, but rather it was the bottom line profit for the multinational corporations that would control agribusiness from the top down. Their plan has succeeded perfectly. And that's the world we live in today. Three or four companies control the entire North American beef processing market, pig slaughtering, and so forth. Pork, grain, chickens. Engdahl responds, "The sanitary conditions in these industrialized settings are absolutely horrendous beyond belief. They are so dirty and so filthy that it produces disease and disease and recalls of food in the marketplace that we never had prior to World War II. Money changer. And yet the deadly results of those processors and producers is never held against them. Very few press reports, and never the USDA or FDA reports say, hey, these CAFOs and the way they process animals are a train wreck and packing too many animals in too small a space causes disease, overuse of antibiotics, and after the animals are slaughtered, huge recalls for lethal contamination. Instead, they use it against small farmers to put them out of business and to smear the safety of their produce. And Engdahl's response is, yes, absolutely. The absolute opposite of the truth. To groups that I speak to across the United States and Europe, I often say that the most precious link of the food production chain is the family farmer. If we extinguish that family farmer, that species, that special entity, life on this planet will be in danger. And ladies and gentlemen, I came from a second generation Midwest family farm. And I know farmers who get up at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning to care for a sick calf and their animals and crops. And without that kind of personalized care and attention to the food product, you end up with diseased animals. 50,000 chicks in a single brooder house, pumped up with antibiotics and sanitary conditions that would kill anybody. And here's an example. A few years ago, the huge bird flu scare flew out of Asia. In front of the National Institute of Health, President Bush held a press conference. And President Bush invited the World Health Organization director, and he talked about upping his request to Congress for $1 billion to purchase Tamiflu vaccine to fight a possible human bird flu outbreak. Now, his alarmist presentation and pressure led the World Health Organization to reverse its policy 180 degrees. Suddenly, they discovered that the biggest danger of spreading bird flu were carriers from Asia into Western Europe and North America and unsanitary conditions among free-roaming backyard chickens. Engdahl then went on to say that the safest places are these industrial concentrations of chicken production. Then they floated the incredible myth that deadly ill birds were flying from the heart of Vietnam and China from east to west, carrying bird flu all the way into the Ukraine, North Germany, Turkey, Croatia, and other parts of Europe. For a few weeks, people panicked about eating chicken. Then, miraculously, somebody from the Audubon Society pointed out a very basic fact, and that is, birds do not migrate from the east to the west. They migrate from the north to the south. And suddenly, that whole argument fell to pieces. Somebody else figured out that every bird flu outbreak occurred near factory concentrations of birds, of chicken production in Asia. They weren't coming from backyard flocks. They were coming from these huge industrialized chicken processing companies. And companies there were built on the model of Tyson Foods, Thai, Vietnamese, and Chinese owners of these agribusiness companies belong to David Rockefeller's Trilateral Commission. That seems to be the story on bird flu. And under USDA and other pressure, the World Health Organization reversed its position to give their support to agribusiness, not agriculture. They support agribusiness. They are opposed to agriculture. Agriculture being the family farm, small agricultural business. Well, Seeds of Destruction traces the history of agribusiness emergence. It is the most dangerous threat to life on this planet. It's not just GMO, but GMO as the final link in agribusiness controlling humanity's food chain. That's the biggest threat to health and life on this planet. Much bigger than nuclear war. Let me pause here and point out one more factor, one that maybe you hadn't considered. In the Bible, again, in Matthew chapter 24, there's a story in here. Jesus' disciples came to him one day, and they said, "Hey, boss, tell us what the conditions are going to be like at the end of the age, just before your second return, the second advent, the end of the world," depending upon who you are and where you're at and how you phrase it. And Jesus made a long statement. The entirety of chapter 24 tells you about the great tribulation and world conditions, but he made this observation about verse 22. He said, "Except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake those days shall be shortened." Now that's a biblical statement. He said, listen to this again. He says, "Except those days should be shortened." Except in that period of time. If we don't cut it short, no flesh. Now that's a pretty broad statement. I can't tell you with specificity, does he intend by that statement, no flesh shall be saved alive, that no life, no animal life on the planet will be saved alive, all the fishes and whales, all of the humans and all of the animals will be destroyed, or is he referring to human beings? No human life would be saved alive. I can't tell you that. I don't know. But either of those two scenarios ought to boggle our minds. It's mind-boggling. Only in biblical terms would we see a statement like that. Now, we read in the Money Changer, here's a scientist, here's an economist, he writes a book, he says, "Did you know? Multinational corporations like Tyson Foods, ConAgra, Archer Daniels Midland, financed by big foundations like the Rockefeller Foundation and the Ford Foundation, are seeking to control all of the food supplies on planet Earth by patenting them, driving the small farmers out of business, replacing them with multinational agribusiness companies like ADM and Cargill and the others, and then systematically starving and diseasing the world's population until they have reduced it to 500 million. And of course, this raises the question, after you've killed 1 billion, 2 billion, 3 billion, we want to continue. 4 billion, 5 billion, 6 billion, and now it's time to stop it. How in the hell do you stop bird flu? How do you stop AIDS? How do you stop genetic modification? Once the genie's out of the jar, how do you put the genes back into the jar when you've reached this desired level of population? Now mull that one over, and we'll take this up next time, talking about Franklin Sanders' interview with William Ingdahl in Seeds of Destruction, next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.